As we mentioned, a couple weeks ago, we're making a transition, new series. We're going to spend the next few months looking at 1 Kings directly and exploring all the kings and examples we find there and endeavor to grow in our faith and understanding of the history of God's people. So we're going to start in chapter 1, but before we do need to consider some review here. First, a little bit of a background to 1 Kings, so that we don't just jump right in without understanding. You've got a couple other books that would be really needful for you to go and look at. First would be Judges. Of course, Judges is the period of time when God was king, and he had appointed different individuals to act as judge. Of course, as you get to the end of Judges and into 1 Samuel, Samuel being the last of those judges, the people cry out for a king. And so God relents to their cry. He establishes the first king of the nation of Israel as Saul. So King Saul takes the reins, and you'll notice a chart here. I'm sorry, it's kind of small writing, but you can, after class, you can come up and take a look at it. But on the chart, it's listed the kings of both of the United Kingdom period as well as the divided kingdom. And the first three there, of course, are Saul, David, and Solomon. Each of them, interestingly enough, reigning about 40 years. So of Israelite history, of the king history, there's 120 years there with the United Kingdom. It's after that, when you get to the reign of Rehoboam, that because of the sin of Solomon and also the sin of Rehoboam, that God takes away 10 of those kingdoms and gives them to a man named Jeroboam. And he begins to reign. And we'll get there and talk about that. But this chart, I think, is nice and neat and flows really well through the different kings. David, as you'll notice on the chart, just prior to 1 Kings chapter 1, has been reigning for about 40 years as you get into the first chapter. It's going to move quickly to Solomon, and we're going to spend some time looking at his reign. As you can notice there, for about 40 years, his reign will last. During David's reign, the kingdom had experienced prosperity. But it's under Solomon that the kingdom really experiences some real peace. As you may remember, David wanted to build the temple, but why did God say no? He was a man of war, and he had experienced much war and had fought the enemies off. It's not until Solomon that God gives the okay, you can build the temple. Solomon, because he isn't a man of war, he's a man of peace. And for his reign, it's really peaceful. Now, thinking about that, let's go to this next slide here. Let's think about the review of some important things to set up 1 Kings chapter 1. So Saul was Israel's first king. Now, why was he deposed by God?
Didn't listen to what God told him to do, especially with Amalek.
Number one, he didn't listen. What was this?
He didn't follow God's command of Amalek to destroy.
Yeah, so he failed to listen to God. Number two, I would agree, he failed to annihilate the Amalekites. But there's a third thing he did. So there's three kind of big problems he had. Those are two.
He chose to offer sacrifice on his own.
Yes, rather than waiting. And if you go back and read that, he just waited, just, was it a day or just a little while?
Impatience like me. Yeah. Just don't wait.
He got very impatient. Didn't want to wait on, why is his name? Samuel. He didn't want to wait on Samuel, as he should have. And so he offers sacrifice. And so those three reasons are really what led to his removal as king. David, however, what separates David and Saul? Was David a perfect king?
No,
he had mistakes, didn't he? And he actually committed willful sin. I like that in our study earlier this morning with Mitch's study. David committed willful sin in murdering a man. So the difference between Saul and David is not that David was sinless and Saul was full of sin. That's not the difference. What is the difference between the two?
David was willing to listen and be confronted with his sin and then consider what he needs to do about it, change.
Mm-hmm. Which would lead to repentance. All those things, right? He would listen, hear God speak. He's willing to be brokenhearted enough to repent of his wickedness. What is when Samuel goes to find David, do you remember what the characteristic is? Yes. So God tells Samuel, do not look at him like you would other men. I'm not looking for that. I'm looking at the heart. And so God was after a man after his own heart. And that's the big difference between David and Saul. So Saul is loses his kingdom, which also means all his family is deposed. So all that he had, as far as even inheritance, is gone. There's only one of his sons that survives. David takes care of. Who? Yes, Mephibosheth, who was a cripple, right? Which is interestingly enough. He's the one that David allows to eat at his own table. That brings us to Saul. So David was chosen by God to succeed Saul. And God promised, and this is real important. So if you go to 2 Samuel, we won't read this, but I'll have the reference. It's up there, number 3. 2 Samuel 7, God makes a promise. What was his promise to the throne of David? Do you remember?
That he would build him a house.
What would you say?
That God would build David a house.
Okay.
And somebody would sit on David's throne throughout.
Okay.
His descendants will continue for several generations if, same thing, same if he gave Samuel, so if you follow my rules and do what I said.
So God makes a covenant promise with David that someone from his house would reign on the throne. And of course that has messianic prophetic things to it when it comes to Jesus. Jesus being in the line of David. Let's see. Now, let's go to 2 Samuel 24. I'll briefly talk about this, and then we'll get into 1 Kings chapter 1. So, 2 Kings 24. Anybody remember, what's the summary of 2 Kings 24? We said David wasn't a perfect man. What did I say? I am so sorry. I'm really throwing y'all off. It'd be good if I said the right book. 2 Samuel 24. 2 Samuel 24, the lead in to 1 Kings chapter 1. What somebody summarize real quickly, what's the beginning of 2 Samuel 24 about?
Okay,
wants to know how many warriors, what do you say?
The census.
The census. Now, what's the problem with the census? I mean, he's just getting a number, right? He just wants to know his soldiers. What's the problem?
God told him he'd make him minions of stars and all that. It's a trust issue.
Trust issue, and it's a command issue, right? God didn't want him to do it. And 2 Samuel, said it right that time, 24, may leave you with the idea that God had tempted David to do that. If you go over to 1 Chronicles, though, what we find out, it's not God who did it, but who?
Satan.
Who?
Satan
put it in his heart to tempt him to do this. And so he takes his census. It's he shouldn't have done that. And so he gets into trouble, which leads to God's judgment on the people.
But he didn't listen to his own commander and others who asked him, why are you doing this?
Yeah, so
Joab didn't want to do it. The others, so why did he do this? And David overruled it and said, if you will, willful sin again, I guess, in a way. Because they tried to remind him of what God had said and where you ought to go, and he refused.
Yeah, absolutely. And so he sins, which leads to God's judgment, not just on David. Interestingly enough, God's judgment is on the people, which, you know, you could spend some time discussing why is God just not directly punish David? Because David asked God, punish me, not the people, right? But God, let's see.
God didn't give him three choices.
Yeah, it gives him three choices.
Punishment and all that, he chooses one he thinks would be easier on the people because he recognizes he's the cause.
Yeah, so if you go to 2 Samuel 24:12, he lays out the three options. And he says 3 years of famine. Fleeing before your enemies, right? You're having the enemies come in and punish. Or pestilence in your land, all right? And so David chooses which one? The third option. He chooses the third option because he believes in the mercy of God. Verse 14, and the mercy of God shows up. Just kind of interesting to note this. The angel of the Lord is sent into the land. It says 70,000 men died. But the angel stops where? At the house of Araunah, right on the threshing floor of this man's house. And this is where David ends up buying the plot. He's going to build an altar there. Eventually, what ends up on this? The temple. The temple Solomon builds will be built here, which is where the mercy of God showed itself. All right. So that gets you up to 1 Kings chapter 1. Questions? No questions? Everybody's good? Araunah, he has another name. If you read another, I think if you read 1 Chronicles, it gives him another name. What is it? Yeah. Is it Othniel? Is that his name? Y'all can go over there and look. It's in 1 Chronicles. But that's where the temple eventually gets built. All right, so let's go to 1 Kings chapter 1. In this study, this is what I hope to cover. Probably won't. Y'all know how quickly I go. But we've looked at the background. We've already done that. The events of chapter 1, we're going to lay those out. We're going to see Anijah is going to try to set himself up as king. We'll talk about who he is in just a minute. He's going to try to, because David is older, he's going to try to take the throne, not by force, but by quick action. But David had promised the throne to another man. We find out later in the chapter, who was that other person?
Solomon,
the son of Bathsheba. David made that promise. Nathan helps Bathsheba to go to David. The end of the chapter, you have Solomon anointed as king, and you have the rebellion collapse. And so that's what we're going to look at as we go. We're going to make some application as we move along through these. And then in chapter 2, David, you're going to see the transition to Solomon. So as we get in chapter 2 on, is really about Solomon. And he takes the reins and he begins to rule. And he has some pretty tough decisions to make very early on. And David leaves him with some requests, interestingly enough. All right, so let's go to 1 Kings chapter 1. And let's go to, we won't read all of these. I'm going to highlight particular verses. I hope you've had a chance to read through these. Please read Kings. It'll help us all understand and be able to discuss these things even better if you spend some time just each week reading a couple chapters. But let's begin at verse 1. because this really sets the stage. So verse 1 says, now King David was old and advanced in years. And although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. That's a miserable state to be in. We have some people who come in our building who can never, I don't think they ever feel like they can get warm in here. If I could pick on her, she's not here, but Miss Tara said the other day when it was 85 in here, she felt great. I'm over here sweating. But here's David. He's getting older. You can tell physically. I think the reason the Bible gives, God gives us, is he wants us to get some kind of insight to where David is. Physically, his body is wearing out. Mm-hmm. He has a young lady in verse 2 who comes to help him. You think about assisted living facilities. That's essentially what she's doing. She's assisting him as he's gotten older. That's verse 2. Her name is Abashtag. Abashek. Abashek. And she's a Shunammite woman. All right, so that's the first four verses. You see David's declining health. He's unable to keep himself warm. His life is drawing to an end. So what's the significance of that as we read Kings? Well, with one king's death is a period of what? Transition and uncertainty. It could possibly lead to real infighting, even civil war. Now, we've seen this before, haven't we? With the kingdom of Judah, right? Israel. Haven't we seen it before? Y'all looking at me like I'm crazy. Yeah, we saw it with the end of King Saul's reign, right? Did David have a smooth transition to king? No, he didn't. And then later on, we have the whole episode with Absalom, where he is upset about what David's been doing, and he tries to take the kingdom away from David. David actually has to flee. So these periods of transition can lead to great turmoil, and that's where you're possibly headed for here. Now, as you read, David hasn't done the best job setting Solomon up to follow him, but he's done enough, and he will do enough with the help of Nathan to make this transition a little smoother than it could have been. As you go further into Kings, you'll see other kings who do a very terrible job, and it leads to a tremendous amount of turmoil, especially in the northern kingdom of Israel.
Was Adonijah really being out of place? He was next in line.
All right, so we're going to talk about that. Yeah, no, it's a great thing, so keep that thought. We'll come right back to you. What?
He was next in line.
All right, so give me just a second. I'm coming right there. All right, so good question. All right, verse 5. Let's read 5 and 6. So Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. Notice what he's saying. I will be king. Before I go on, I'm sorry. I'm going to stop myself a lot. When Absalom tried to take the kingdom away from David, what did Absalom do prior to his trying to take the reign? Do you remember what he would do?
He tried to get in good with all the people and told them, I'll take care of all your problems.
Yeah. Yes.
Just come see me. I wish I was, I had more power.
Yes.
I could help you more.
So where did he sit each day? At the gate, which is where all the older men would gather. And he ingratiated himself politically with all these people. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll take care of you. He was getting with constituency, right? And he was trying to win popularity. Well, I'm going to mispronounce his. I'm going to switch the pronunciation because I cannot get his name right. I forever wanted to call him Adonijah. This is what I'm trying to learn myself to say. Adonijah exalts himself. He says, I will be king. And we'll talk about in a minute what Doug is saying is true as far as where he is in the lineage of sons. And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen, 50 men to run before him. He's setting up a political campaign, isn't he? It's a political campaign. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, "Why have you done thus or so?" Did you catch that? This is one of David's failings. David is a great king with the people. He is not a great father. I hate to say that, but it's just simply the truth. He made some big boo-boos with his children, and he let them get away with things. He never said, although he had made a promise that he has to be reminded of, he never stops Adonijah from doing what he's doing. He was also a very handsome man. That always helps. You know, Absalom was a very handsome man. And he was born next after Absalom. Gets that at the end. So I have a little sheet here for you.
Exactly what I want.
I'll try to get a better chart. I want to show like an age chart or a hierarchy chart here. But I'm gonna let Doug, if he didn't mind, passing these out for me. But these are the sons of David as we know them. Do we know all the sons of David?
No.
No, we don't. David and Solomon, lots of children, lots of wives. But as you'll see there, that's a list of their children. That's a chronological age chart. But the oldest of his sons, David's firstborn, was who? Absalom. Now, what do we know about firstborn rights? They get double portion of inheritance, and they get double blessing from the patriarch.
Who says Amon was his firstborn?
I'm sorry. Amon was. I'm sorry. You're right. What happened to Amon? Anybody remember what happened to Amon?
He died.
Who killed him?
Killed
Y'all know this. Absalom killed him.
Yeah.
Because Amon had...
met with his sister.
I hate the harsh term, but he raped his sister. And Absalom was angry about it. He had a good... You know, Amon loved his sister. I'm sorry. Absalom loved his sister, did not like what Amon had done. Now remember, these are half-siblings. And again, David, with all of his wife making, all his children making, he's bound to have problems. And you get this, all these children, all these children, there's, you know, stepbrothers, sisters, you know, and then you add power to it, it creates even more problems. So Amnon was the oldest. Amnon died. He was murdered. Then it was Absalom who was next in line to take the throne. And he tried to take the throne early. And that didn't ultimately work out well for the nation or ultimately for Absalom. You remember Absalom's the one that got his hair stuck in the tree. And then his head got chopped off. Very brutal. Was that Joab did that?
Yeah.
Joab displeased David a few times. That was one of the times he displeased David. So you have those who die. Well, who's next? I believe, and again, there's some speculation to this. There's not a clear, as far as I know, a clear chart of his children, ages and all that. But I believe Adonijah would have been next. So, as Doug said, he would have seemingly been the one to be appointed. However, David had made a promise to Bathsheba in regard to Solomon. All right. So we'll come back to that in just a minute. So he says, "I'll be king." He gathers his chariots, his horsemen, 50 men to run before him. And like Absalom before him, he attempts to gain the throne through self-promotion. Okay, that's what he's hoping to do. So let's go. So he's doing that. Let's go to verse 7. Let's continue reading here. He conferred with Joab, the son of Jeruah, and with Abiathar, the priest. So he's trying to grow political power. Who are you going to reach out to? You're going to get the military leader, and you're going to look at the priesthood as well, right? And so he's trying to get them on his side. And the text says he was successful, and they followed Adonijah and helped him. Okay, so that's on his side. He has Joab and Abiathar. But not everybody followed them, right? Okay, so you keep reading. But, verse 8, Zadok the priest and Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, and Nathan the prophet. Nathan is a big one there because Nathan has been very faithful to God, and he held a lot of sway. So did the other guys as well, but Nathan's a big one. And then Shimei and Ray and David's, notice this, David's mighty men were with Adonijah. Those are all, so he gained some political power with the two he got, but there are several who are not with him. And ultimately, that may have been his downfall. And so he goes to set himself up, and he invites everybody, verse 9, to meet with him, and he's going to appoint himself king. But he did invite a few people. Verse 10 tells us he did not invite Nathan, the prophet, or Benaniah, or the mighty men, or Solomon, his brother, to his anointing. So he is just going on with it. You notice he's not consulted David at all, which probably indicates the idea he knew Solomon was in line to get this, and he's just trying to circumvent all of that. Okay, so that sets the background of what we're going to next. Any questions about that? Any comments so far?
Do you think you can get away with it because David has never stopped him anything else before in behavior?
Well, and I go back, yeah, I think so, because verse 6 tells us that David had never reprimanded him, had never done anything to displease Adonijah. He never said, why are you doing this? And so I think that gave him a sense of permission to do what he's doing. All right. Okay, so let's go to the next section. This is a little bit longer. This is 11 through 30. Again, we won't read all of these. I hope you'll take time to read through them, think about them, but if you haven't already. But it is in this next section that Nathan and Bathsheba hear what's going on, and they're going to go back to David and remind him of what he's promised. So go to verse 11. We'll read just a few verses here. Then Nathan said to Bathsheba, and I think it's interesting, Nathan is the one doing the protecting. It's Nathan's initiative that sets all this going as far as the book is written. So Nathan goes to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, and says, have you not heard Adonijah, the son of Haggith, has become king? Notice that, has become king. He's self-appointed. He's self-appointed, but he is beginning to make the people believe he's king. And David, our Lord, does not know it. Well, what condition is David in at this time? Not one in which he is really up to date with what's happening.
Is it possible that Nathan's the protector, if you will, the leader, because he's the only one in touch with God? And going with it, because he is David's seer, if you will, an advisor all along. And this is going, so he probably knows about the Solomon thing too, and that's God's direction. I just wonder if it's...
No,
it's... Other people aren't really paying attention to God, but Nathan is, and he's saying, I can't be quiet anymore. I got to intercede here.
Yeah, and if you think about it, had they not asked for a king at this time, they were still living under judges. It's likely Nathan is your judge, right? And so he is somewhat protector of the kingdom. Yeah, so he definitely notices what's going on. He knows that David isn't keeping up. And also, I think, look at the fraction that's already occurred. You have Joab and Abiathar have went with Ahijah, but there are many others that haven't. What is that going to cause? A rip, right? A real fracture. And I think he can see that coming. And so I think he is probably trying to protect Solomon and Bathsheba, but maybe his much greater concern is, what's this going to do to the nation? He says in verse 13, "Go at once to King David and say to him, 'Did you not, my lord the king, swear to your servant, saying, Solomon shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne? Why then is Adonijah king?'" All right, so had David made this promise? So if you go to 1 Chronicles 22, verse 9, we get confirmation that he is about Solomon. This is actually from the perspective of God, right? God is proclaiming. So not David, God selected Solomon. And of course, that promise had been delivered to Bathsheba. But it was God who chose Solomon, not Adonijah. And of course, that's very fascinating from the standpoint of the history of David and Bathsheba, you know, where all that had come, that he was their first child. But God had selected Solomon to reign. We'll have to end here. I know I'm out of time. But so they go back. They remind David of this. Let's see here. Verse 14. Then while you are still speaking with the king, I will also come in after you and confirm your word. So Nathan has devised this plan with Bathsheba. You're going to go into him. You're going to say, "Did you not make this promise?" And then Nathan says, "I'll come in behind you. I'm going to confirm that that is true." And so that's what we'll see going on in 15 forward. She goes in and does exactly what Nathan had directed her to do. Verse 17, reminding him of the promise was made. Solomon, your son shall reign after me. He shall sit on my throne. So we'll stop there. I can keep going. I love this stuff. But if you will read chapter 1, chapter 2. Chapter 1 is kind of long, but just read through it. We'll get into chapter 2 next week and get into the reign of Solomon. And it's a good reign for the first portion. And then you have the latter section. So Solomon's reign really can be divided into two sections, his early reign, his later reign. His early reign is very faithful. His latter reign, he begins to wander off away from God, and we'll see that as we read. Any other questions or comments?
It really surprises me about how formal Bathsheba has to be with David, that she has to ask, you know, permission, and all this, like, that's his wife. I mean, I guess it's cultural. Right?
Yeah. That's like that. Well, Lisa threatened to make it more like this with me. So, like, you have to wait until you're invited in.
Same kind of thing that happened to Esther, though, right? See, same kind of thing. Like, yeah. You just don't go into the king, well, even if you're his wife, without permission.
So, if we take a broader view, they asked for a king because they wanted to do what? They wanted to be other nations. So, you see them copying, even here, the other nations. And when you're going to have this many wives, and you're setting this stuff up, and you're making it more of a cold-natured relationship. I mean, right?
Yeah.
God's established one man, one woman. Because the relationship between a husband and wife should be intimate, not formal like this. But I would argue that some of what we see is comes out of a direct result of as his breaking that rule of marriage. Yeah, and
instead of being like God says, this is the people I want, you gotta be like everybody else.
Yeah.
Instead of being different.
Good points. Anything else? I'm gonna get Lisa one of those things that King had, King Hazarus, and she can. I hope I get the scepter when I come in. I was over his head. Well, good study, good thoughts. Thank y'all for your attention and thoughtfulness in this study. Please go ahead and read that going forward. And we'll come back to chapter 1 and verse 15 and continue forward here next week.